My name is Al Whitney.
And my name is Ingrid Castle.
Welcome to In Defense of Humanity on this first day of October 2016.
Our program is about helping people reawaken to the wonderful qualities of our own species.
While accepting and understanding that the current corporate commercial legal structure, both government and business, is built upon,
is actively seeking to take control of most organic life forms on our planet.
Restoring our unalienable rights and preserving our planet will require that
we, the people, understand what has happened and learn how to empower ourselves as living men and women.
Much of the information we discuss on our show can be found on my website, anticorruptionsociety.com. After the show, links to the material we talk about on the program will be posted on the IDH program links page.
If you need to remind yourself why humanity is worth defending, please read and enjoy the In Defense of Humanity page that's listed at the top of the Anti-Corruption Society home page.
Well, tonight we have, I hope, an interesting topic. It has come to my attention this past week. The problem that people are having financially and the solution many of them seek called bankruptcy. I'd like to talk a little bit about the situation in our country for people who are facing just untold economic hardships and are considering filing an official bankruptcy in the U.S. courts. And then I'd like to spend a little bit of time at the after that talking about how what we learn from our personal bankruptcies and how that works can be applied to the bankruptcy of the United States, which occurred in the 30s, the early 30s, because there is a lot of similarities. If you understand one, you'll start to understand the other one and the impact that it has had on all our lives. Again, how did I get interested in this? I have one relative who many years ago filed a Chapter 7, which is complete bankruptcy, and got him out from under all of his debts, and he was able to get a fresh start. The rules that were applied to that action for him when he went into the bankruptcy court were based on the Bankruptcy Reform Act of 1978. I have another relative who filed a Chapter 13, okay, around 2004 or 5, I think, and that was, again, under the Bankruptcy Reform Act of 1978. Now, one of those relatives got into financial difficulty again, which shouldn't surprise anybody, and 3 years ago, they were seeking relief in the bankruptcy court. Now, this relative worked full-time and had small children to take care of, so I jumped in and said, I'll be happy to investigate this for you. I will go online and get the paperwork, and perhaps I can get, you know, the paperwork started and read the instructions. And the idea was I would learn what this relative needed to know, and we would come together, and I would share what I had learned and help her through the process. But what happened instead is what I learned was so horrific. It took me so long. It was so incredibly complex that when I got done and explained to her what was involved, she sat down and came up with a different plan. And I approved that because I was just mind blown by what was involved. Now, I was not really aware that in 2005, because again, I was paying attention to other things, that was not a part of my awareness at the time, that legislation was passed by Congress, and it was called the Bankruptcy Abuse Prevention and Consumer Protection Act, again in 2005. What it should have been called is the Bankruptcy Abuse Prevention and Creditor Protection Act. but instead they called it the Consumer Protection Act. Now, this was passed before I even investigated anything. Some of the time I got involved 3 years ago, I was looking at this new bankruptcy law, this new system that had been put in place, and it was atrocious. It wasn't until recently I had a friend who was toying with the idea and literally needed the protection of bankruptcy relief, looking at the situation and the economic downturn and the hardship this friend excuse me, was enduring. So I went back and I kind of revisited this again to say, well, maybe I didn't look close enough. Well, while doing that, reviewing what's involved in filing bankruptcy, I came across the most wonderful article. I mean, it just said it all. It said it all in broad terms, not just the terms of what happened in that act. This article came out of the California Western Law Review. I believe it was published in 2012 in the California Western Law Review. It was written by an attorney, Linda Coco, who happened to be an associate professor of law at Barry University. Linda Coco did the research on this and did it, and I looked at the credits. It does look like there were others that helped her in this, but this was just most amazing. I'm going to put a link to it so people can take a look and read it for themselves. The name of the article is Debtor's Prison in the Neoliberal State, quote, Debt Fair, unquote, and the Cultural Logics of the Bankruptcy Abuse Prevention and Consumer Protection Act of 2005. I know that's a lot of words, but it's just wonderful. I mean, my husband read it too, and we went, wow, such a breath of fresh air from an attorney telling the actual truth about not only the microeconomics, which is my household economics and my job and us paying our bills and paying, getting mortgages and that, but the macroeconomics picture, which of course affects the microeconomics picture. The macroeconomics picture, this author is referring to as the neoliberal state, and more people are, I think, familiar with the term the free market state, the deregulated state. Okay, the state that started when Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher said, oh, we got to deregulate government, it's standing in the way. And I think a lot of us remember that happened in the 70s. It started in the 80s anyway. And then it's continued on and on to where they reversed the Glass-Steagall Act and they allowed private banking to merge with investment banking, and the robber barons were allowed to take money from one source and put it to another, and they were allowed to gamble with people's checking account money, and the whole thing that precipitated the crash in 2008 was a result of the deregulation of the banking industry. Well, this lawyer understood that. She didn't pretend that it's all the fault of the people. In fact, I'm going to read some of this because she actually admits and acknowledges that the people are being blamed for their financial, I'm trying to think, irresponsibility. It's blamed on the individual employee worker in the United States for not borrowing too much money, not paying their bills, yada, yada. But in actuality, what is happening, why there are bankruptcies, why there are people struggling so hard, is what happened with the macroeconomic picture, which is it moved into a high level of economic parasitism, I think is the best way to call it. So I'm going to read you some excerpts on this wonderful piece that this woman put together to kind of make a point of what has really happened here in our country. First of all, they've tried to make it as if you can't afford to pay your bills, It's an amoral act. And she says on page 4, building on dominant culture discourses of individualism and moral behavioralism, the report, and she's talking about the report connected with the Bankruptcy Abuse Prevention, and I'm just going to call it the Bankruptcy Abuse Act, okay? She's talking about the report associated with that. The report asserts, quote, shoplifting is wrong. Bankruptcy is also a moral act in that there is a conscious decision not to keep one's promises. The stated goal of the act, then, is to restore personal responsibility and integrity into the bankruptcy system. She goes on to say, in light of the stated purpose, the Bankruptcy Abuse Act appears to be an exquisite example of law unhinged from reality, because Congress crafted the act based on an utterly misinformed premise about who files bankruptcy. She goes on to say on page 6, before the passage of the Bankruptcy Abuse Act, bankruptcy scholars emphasized this possible effect of the proposed legislative reforms and predicted that the new law would make access to bankruptcy more difficult for all. Bankruptcy Abuse Act complex and burdensome provisions create financial and procedural barriers which prevent consumer debtors from receiving a fresh start as intended by the 1978 code. And in that, she's referring to the previous law that had been in place all those years, which regulated bankruptcies. The 2005 Act forecloses families from considering bankruptcy as a real option for relieving financial distress. The Consumer Bankruptcy Project reported that the Bankruptcy Abuse Act functions like a barricade, blocking out hundreds of thousands of struggling families indiscriminately, regardless of their individual income circumstances. It appears to have the insidious result of destroying the effectiveness of the 1978 Bankruptcy Code. The effects of the Bankruptcy Abuse Act are often described as unintended consequences, but perhaps, as legal scholar Margaret Howard suggests, there are no unintended consequences here. These changes do not appear accidental. The 1978 code was criticized as too liberal. It helped millions of middle-class families obtain a fresh start. The Bankruptcy Abuse Act does what Ellen Warren cautioned in 1997. The Bankruptcy Abuse Act introduced proposed amendments to the 1978 code that did not strengthen the consumer bankruptcy system, but rather destroyed it. Bankruptcy Abuse Act has not only destroyed key consumer-oriented aspects of the 1978 code, but it has also created neoliberal mechanisms for reallocating the risks and responsibility of the lending relationship onto the shoulders of the borrowers. Bankruptcy professionals refer to the Bankruptcy Abuse Act as the Leave No Creditor Behind law, because in its poor drafting, confusion, and inconsistency, it manages to shift the risk and responsibility of the lending relationship onto consumer debtors by keeping financially distressed individuals servicing debt obligations both inside and outside the bankruptcy system. Debtors are forced to continue to either pay high interest rate payments outside bankruptcy or allocate all of their disposable income to their debts through bankruptcy. Thus, the Bankruptcy Abuse Act benefits issuers of credit cards, car lenders, and mortgage holders in both instances. Bankruptcy Abuse Act benefits creditors by putting up barriers to entry. And by that, they mean ability to file petition for bankruptcy. That is, increased course costs and attorney fees, and creating pitfalls, that is, credit counseling requirements and new eligibility standards, resulting in dismissals of bankruptcy cases. In effect, the needy individual is precluded from using the bankruptcy system. This increases the individual's overall debt load, because in the time the individual is prevented from filing, high monthly interest continues to accrue. This process is known as the sweat box. You know what? That just made me sick when I said that, because it is so true.
It is. I mean, I don't know how far you wanted to continue, but there's so much about this whole system that's why they call it the Creditor Relief Act of 2005. That's really the more appropriate term, because it did nothing to help people that were in financial straits. And you look at these credit cards now, and I just got a notice from a credit card that I have that I really kind of didn't want to have, but, you know, it was a second credit card, and I just kind of noticed that their interest rate went up to 28%. I mean, it's just as general. Thank God I'm able to pay it off every month. But I remember when, you know, about 20 years ago when I separated from my first husband, I was, you know, financially destitute. I needed to use a credit card just to put a new transmission in my car so I could get to and from work, right? And it was over $1,000. It was a lot of money. I had to put it on a credit card, and I had to make payments.
Right, and we're going to go.
And you can totally get lost in when you're making payments on a credit card if it's 28%.
Okay, and we're going to go into that next, because what you just described is what's going on all over the place, and here's what we're going to point out. This was not an accident; it was planned.
Absolutely.
This is a planned economic attack against the American population. Sadly, I think it is forced austerity.
Right.
And sadly, I think it's going on in countries beyond our borders. But I'd like to continue reading, because she's got so much wonderful stuff here. Again, taking this back into macroeconomics, which is really important to, without understanding the macroeconomics, which is the big picture, it's hard to understand how the big picture is being inflicted on our everyday lives. So,
well, it totally ties in with the housing bubble, too.
Okay, on page 11. Mm-hmm. The free market policy and the practice of deregulation facilitated enormous debt loads.
Okay, you hear that?
Yeah, I do. We'll continue
after the
break.
We're coming up on a break. We'll continue after the break.
Do you or someone you know suffer from chest pain, blood pressure, cholesterol, or irregular heartbeat? Are you looking for a more natural solution to overcome these health challenges? You hear the ads all the time. If this stuff's so good, why doesn't my doctor prescribe it? That's easy. Doctors are not trained in natural medicine. Extendivite Heart Tonic does want you to be as healthy as you can be, and it really works. Take Extendivite for 6 months and your doctor will say, "I don't know what you're doing, but don't stop. It's working for you." Get the dependability of Extendivite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite. Do you have difficulty taking supplements? Are you searching for a high-quality, complete nutritional drink that your whole family will love? NutriMedical's Life Support has arrived. All of your daily nutritional requirements in one quick, delicious drink. Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support is a proprietary blend of vegan protein, activated vitamins, essential minerals, amino acids, probiotics, green tea, digestive enzymes, anti-inflammatories, cancer prevention, detoxification, and much more. Your body will high-five you for this one. Life Support is the best complete nutritious meal replacement on the market. Whether you are an elite athlete, have post-operative challenges, chronic illness, elderly, or a family that just wants a quick, delicious drink, try Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support for optimized nutrition in one great-tasting smoothie. Just add cold water, almond milk, fruit, or anything else you like. NutriMedical's Life Support. Try our great-tasting chocolate or vanilla today. Call 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutriMedical.com. NutriMedical.com for the whole family.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
And we're here tonight. We're talking about bankruptcy. We're going to talk about personal bankruptcy, and then we're going to relate it to national bankruptcy. And we're reading right now a wonderful piece that was submitted to California Western Law Review by attorney Linda Coco, and I believe that was in year 2012. And she's talking about the Bankruptcy Abuse Act, which was passed in 2005 by our Congress. And this is so atrocious what they did. Again, you're back to being suspicious that they didn't bother to read it. If they read it and passed it, that's even worse. Okay, so on page 11, she's talking about the free market policy. Now, when we say neoliberalism, a lot of people call that free market. The free market policy, some people attribute it to come out of the Chicago economists, which is, again, you know, no restrictions, no regulations. The free market is no tariffs, you know. It's basically a free-for-all for the big corporations and the big banks. And they want us to think it's free market, it's a good thing. But no, it is not a good thing. A deregulation of all these institutions, all it does is allow them to parasite off the population, which is what is going on. So on page 11, she goes on to say, free market policy and the practice of deregulation facilitated enormous debt loads, resulting in a socioeconomic experience of debt fare. I like her using that term. For the average American, debt fare is interlocking debt obligations that last for years, such as mortgage, credit card, car loans, and other monthly payment. Debt fare is a socially constructed trap. And again, when do people get in debt? They get in debt when they don't have enough money to pay their bills, to buy their insurance, or to fix their car. This is what creates the debt. The wages go down, and all of a sudden, the car breaks down, and you have to use a credit card, as Ingrid pointed out, because you don't have the cash. You don't have the money that isn't accounted for to pay for this new expense. On page 12... Linda Coco goes on to say, in the late 1970s, as profits of large corporations begin to stagnate and incomes for investors begin to decline, there was a shift in the economic model. In the U.S., the former political economic organization, let me see if I got this right, yeah, organization of embedded liberalism began to break down and gave way to the rise of a new political economic form identified as neoliberal or free market model. This model emerged with the help of economists and political leaders who supported neoliberal theories advanced by powerful policy and education institutions, with the support of political leaders and prominent economic institutions. Neoliberal theorists, ideas, and notions became globally dominant. On page 13, attempting to ensure increases in corporate profit, investor income, many governments employed economic models. I think I already did that one. All right, going on. First, in an attempt to cut costs, political leaders supported policies that diminished the power of labor and destroyed collective rights. Collective rights and structures standing in the way of market logic include social protections, worker protections, unions, associations, and cooperatives. Free market mandates require a dereliction of labor law, and a deregulation of employment. Second, political leaders supposed the expansion of capital and market into the new economies across the globe. Most notably, New York investment banks lent money to developing Latin American, African countries. This lending ultimately resulted in the debt crisis of the 1980s. And the threat of bankruptcy by Mexico in 1982. The International Monetary Fund mandated austerity onto debtor nations to repay the banks. Sound familiar?
Yep. Well, we're coming up on a break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to In Defense of Humanity on the Republic Broadcasting Network, and we're talking about the new bankruptcy law of 2005. It's actually 11 years old, but it's the Creditor Relief Act is what it really is.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hi, my name is Chris. Since the 1970s, I have been actively making products available that support good health. What makes my juices flow is helping mankind get healthy. Today, I'm going to tell you about a product that will help your juices to flow. I am excited to recommend Dr. Miller's Holy Tea to you. Even if we are eating a clean diet, these impurities are entering our bodies. Holy Tea moves these poisons that are creating havoc with our health out of our bowels. It works on the whole digestive system. The five tasty herbs are combined to provide an amazing detoxifying and healing tea that will rid your body of the pollutants and soothe your digestive tract, and in some cases, help you lose weight. It is critical for our health to move all of the environmental toxins from our bodies. The Holy Tea can do that. As a hydrocolon therapist, remember, with every BM, you're supporting RBN. www.holytea.org. 800-326-2001.
Hey, I'll make you a deal. Give me 60 seconds and I'll give you directions to the Fountain of Youth. Okay, I'm joking. Well, what kind of joking? No fountains, but youth? I got Nature's Youth and their premier anti-aging product, Nature's Youth RSF. With your sensible diet and exercise plan, Nature's Youth RSF can help you look and feel better. RSF is an all-natural amino acid supplement that supports your body to naturally increase HGH levels without any synthetic hormones. And elevated HGH levels can contribute to increased energy, improved libido, reduced body fat, and improved exercise capacity. Let's be honest, who doesn't want to look and feel younger? Visit the newly designed website at naturesyouth.com or call 800-333-6923. That's 800-333-6923 and like them on Facebook and you'll be included in contests and exclusive offers. What a deal. Oh, speaking of deals, my time's about up. 800-333-6923 or naturesyouth.com. Who needs a fountain anyway? Call today.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
About bankruptcy. Right now we're learning about the Bankruptcy Abuse Act of 2005. And I've shortened it, you know, it's longer than that, but that's what it amounts to. Preventing bankruptcy abuse. They think the people who file for bankruptcy are abusing the system. Okay, going on to page 16. For the middle and lower classes, the neoliberal turn has meant job insecurity, lack of unemployment benefits, wage stagnation and decline, decrease of social mobility, work week extension, lack of health care, pension uncertainty, social security decline, environmental degradation, and privatization of resources. This change has been identified as the great risk shift, and she put that in quotes. Over the past generation, quote, economic risk has been increasingly shifted from the broad shoulders of government and corporations onto the backs of American workers and their families, unquote. While large investment banking institutions are dubbed too big to fail, middle-class Americans are failing at an ever-increasing rate. Every risk and responsibility in the process of disintegration of the social contract is attributed to them. And on page 18, since 1979, real wages have increased only 4% annually, while productivity has grown 0.4% annually. I really need to correct that. 0.4% annually, while productivity has grown 2% annually. From 1987 to 1997, corporate profits rose 90%, while the median family income rose only 3%. On page 19, the financial sector preyed on the vulnerable middle class because it knew wage stagnation and the loss of wealth would mean consumers would lose purchasing power. If consumers could no longer purchase manufactured goods, then corporate income and profits would fall, lowering the financial return to the upper classes. In response, revolving consumer credit became increasingly available, and consumer borrowing kept profits high for lending institutions. This opportunistic hocking of debt at teaser rates to the middle class created favorable conditions for debt fare to rise as a way of life for the majority of Americans. On page 20, this is about debt fare. She's using the term debt fare. The average American family currently lives in a state of debt fare. Mortgage debt, revolving credit card debt, home equity debt, and educational debt. Debt fare is not simply one debt form, such as a mortgage or a credit card. It is the interlocking of several debt forms that limit and imprison the typical consumer into servicing debt. Into servicing
policies.
Debt relations as a primary form of social and economic participation. It is a combined debt load that crushes and bankrupts middle-class individuals. In the last 30 years, with the liberalization of the financial markets, the necessary conditions were created to facilitate this consumer debt load. These conditions include deregulation of markets, Wall Street securitization inventions, the Federal Reserve's historically low interest rates, lenders' internal practices, and middle-class wage stagnation. On page 22, in this deregulation climate, investment institutions were able to create new forms of investment products by packaging loans as asset-backed securities, also known as collateral mortgage obligations. I've seen them as CDOs, collateralized debt obligations, and collateralized loan obligations. And people remember those were the creatures that showed up that caused the crash in 2008. And financial products generated enormous profits for investors out of payment streams on loans. They also allowed substantial gain at no cost to banks, attempting to generate fees in the lending and securitization process. Banks heavily advertised to consumers and engaged in reckless and deceptive lending practices. In the consumer mortgage market, the debt fare process for the middle class is particularly apparent. The liberalization of the financial world incentivized banks to entice middle-class Americans to take on more secured debt in the form of mortgages and equity loans. We had a blurb, I think, about that when we did that funny piece by Bird and Fortune, where they were talking about these subprime mortgages and how they were convincing the black man in the stringy vest to take out a loan on his house that was falling down around him, and how they were selling those worthless things, packaging them up and selling them by giving them good names and making a lot of money in the process. They didn't talk much about the little black man in the stringy vest, however. And he is the one who gets stuck with trying to pay the payment or lose the house. And that's what's going on across the country. That's what's been going on, oh gosh, I don't know, since 2008 and longer, as people are losing their homes because their income's gone down and they can't make their payments. And essentially, they should never have been given the mortgages in the first place. But again, that's all a part and parcel to this takedown of the middle class and creating this unsustainable debt and then denying them access to the bankruptcy courts. Okay, now she goes on to talk about educational loans on page 27. Finally, educational loans are another type of debt fare the middle class experiences. In the late 1980s, the Journal of Retail Banking Services discussed various ways subscriber banks could entice consumers to take on revolving credit loans, creating reliable investment securities. The journal proposed, quote, cross-selling new educational and healthcare credit products to under-leveraged consumers, unquote. Consumers over the last three decades were encouraged to take on unsecured loans to pay for education. Last year, collective outstanding student loan debt reached $1 trillion. The average college graduate owes $25,250 at graduation. She's talking about, this was written in 2012, she's talking about 2011, and I have no idea what the figures are today. She goes on page 27 to talk about the debt trap. As sociologist Hugh Gusterson and Catherine Besteman explain, quote, debt is an essential feature of neoliberal society. It greases the wheels of consumerism by enabling Americans to stretch to the edge of their means. It is also an apparatus for transferring wealth from those who need money to those who already have more. And by squeezing more work out of the indebted, it enforces social discipline, unquote. When they did this, they knew exactly what they were doing. They were taking out the middle class. That was the plan. It was very well organized, very well orchestrated. And now it's time for them to villainize the victim. And by making bankruptcy shameful and something you don't want to consider because, oh my gosh, how could that happen to you? You're a failure. They don't want the people to recognize the reason they're facing bankruptcy is they have been victimized by an microeconomic strategy that has been going on since the deregulation was brought in by Ronald Reagan. Actually, it's been going on longer, but
yes,
that's a good place to look at this particular part of it. On page 28, under the 1978 bankruptcy code, the debtor was presumed a good faith actor and received a fresh start through bankruptcy. However, the Bankruptcy Abuse Act presumes that the debtor is a bad actor until he or she proves otherwise. Once filed, the Bankruptcy Abuse Act forces the debtor to pay creditors a portion of the debtor's income and live on a bread and water diet for years, similar to the IMF's approach to debtor nations. Under the Bankruptcy Abuse Act, debtors experience legally mandated austerity to squeeze every dollar from the financially distressed debtor. The Bankruptcy Abuse Act, the impact is on the middle class. It is effectuated in many areas. First, the Act seeks to remoralize consumer debt relations as well as reignite and reinforce the social stigma of debtors, denying them access to a fresh start. Second, the Act creates increased fiscal and procedural barriers to entry for the consumer in financial distress. Third, once in the bankruptcy system, trap doors and pitfalls work to ambush the unwary or the unrepresented, resulted in needy debtors falling out of the bankruptcy system and losing protection of the automatic stay. Fourth, after the debtor survives the initial filing requirement, the debtor's income and expenses are scrutinized to determine the disposable income and the kind of relief, if any, available to the debtor. Finally, the Bankruptcy Abuse Act reduces the, quote, fresh start, unquote, benefits of bankruptcy by requiring repayment plans and reaffirmation agreements. Excuse me. Making more debts non-dischargeable. Limiting dischargeability of debts and limiting dollar amounts of exempt property. The Bankruptcy Abuse Act mandated austerity reduces the overall benefits gained from the bankruptcy process. As a result, debtors do not get a fresh start. So it's a scam. I mean, there's no other way to look at it than it's a scam. People do all of that, pile all that paperwork, and what they're hoping for is a fresh start, and that's generally not what they get. So on page 34, she goes on to say, debtors are also required to file a copy of income tax returns for the previous year, or if the court so orders, a copy of the previous 3 years' returns. Debtors' failure to file any of these documents results in immediately dismissal of their cases. Well, I know a lot of people out there who have found ways not to pay taxes, and I'm not saying they haven't done so legitimately, but they need to know by not paying taxes, and probably, and the listeners can call and tell me how it's going, because some of them probably are in that group, they are closing the door on filing bankruptcy if they should get into debt. Because at the time they are to file bankruptcy in today's courts, which are U.S. district courts, bankruptcy courts, they're a court system in and of their own, in and of themselves. If they haven't filed income tax, they will not be allowed any relief from those courts. Those courts will not consider any restructuring or any forgiveness of any debt. That's by design. That is absolutely by design. Let's see. Going on, there was another section I wanted to read. Okay. On page 40. In effect, the Bankruptcy Abuse Act regulates and controls debtors through intense scrutiny down to the last dollar spent on food and toilet paper. In this way, the Bankruptcy Abuse Act is a control mechanism aimed at managing the lower and middle class. As markets, capitalists, and investors experience increased financial freedom, the financial lives of middle class and lower income individuals are increasingly regulated. This dichotomy reflects the essence of neoliberal policies instituted against the middle and lower classes. Now, I went to, again, I was looking for someone who was in a situation where considering bankruptcy was a very real potential solution, and actually a need, basically. So I went online and I located the instructions, the bankruptcy form for individuals. It's a booklet. I'll put a link up so people can look at it. At the bottom of the page, it says U.S. Bankruptcy Court, December 2015, revised April 2016. Okay, I just want to read you so people get an idea of how bad this is. There is a list of all of the forms, instructions for selected forms. In this, they've got a page listed for each form. And I'm going to give you a list of these forms. You will not believe it. Okay, Schedule AB. Property, official form number 106AB. Schedule C, the property you claim is exempt. Schedule D, creditors who have claims secured by property. Schedule EF, creditors who have unsecured claims. Schedule G, executory contracts and unexpired leases. Schedule H, your co-creditors. Schedule I, your income. Schedule J, your expenses, summary of your assets and liabilities, official form 106-SUM, statement of financial affairs for individuals filing for bankruptcy, Chapter 7, Statement of Your Current Monthly Income and Means Test. Statement of Intention for filing under Chapter 7.
Hey, we're coming up on a break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to In Defense of Humanity with Al Whitney and Ingrid Castle.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and of course you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at numanarepublic.com. That's NUMANARepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of seven herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did. Clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
In Defense of Humanity, we're reading this list of forms that are necessary to file a Chapter 7. I'm just giving the ones for Chapter 7, not Chapter 13. Chapter 13 is reorganization, and Chapter 7 is complete bankruptcy. So I wanted to finish. There's a couple more to add. Statements of intention for individuals filing under Chapter 7. Applications for individuals to pay the filing fee in installments. Application to have the Chapter 7 filing fee waived. Now, that's the list. And I think it's important to note on page 12, they've created a new crime, folks. On page 12 of this instruction booklet, the new crime is called Bankruptcy Crimes Have Serious Consequences. And under that, it says, if you knowingly and fraudulently conceal assets or make a false oath or statement under penalty of perjury, either orally or in writing, in connection with the bankruptcy case, you may be fined, imprisoned, or both. Now, just imagine trying to fill out all those forms, and probably at the bottom of each one, it says, I affirm this is all to the best of my knowledge under penalty of perjury. That means if you make any mistakes on that form, they are trying to say to you, if they determine that you did it fraudulently, they are threatening to imprison you, fine you, and imprison you, or both.
Right.
So back to, I wanted to finish up on this before we start discussing what how this means nationally, what a bankruptcy means nationally. On page 44 of this wonderful article by Linda Kogo, she writes, the Bankruptcy Abuse Act, on the other hand, purports to protect consumers. However, as shown, it protects creditors in the debt relationship much more than borrowers. The Bankruptcy Abuse Act functions to reduce lender and investor risk of default on a loan payment stream by transferring the entire responsibility of default onto the debtor. The securitization frenzy of the last 30 years incentivized lenders to increase their volume of lending because loans, payment streams, were pooled and sold to investors. The key to reducing lender and investor risk with securitization is to prevent default and ensure the payment streams. The Bankruptcy Abuse Act mandates all kinds of repayment forms. With this assurance, lenders can sell payment streams at even higher rates because the risk of debtor default is low and repayment rates are highly secure. Now, most people didn't put a connection, haven't connected the dots between this legislation of bankruptcy abuse prevention and the entire securitization subprime mortgage scam that has gone down. So that, again, they felt they could keep the rates high, even though a lot of the loans were highly questionable. They felt they could keep the rates high because they would be enforced by these bankruptcy laws.
Okay, we're coming to the end of the first hour. Please stay tuned for our second hour. You're listening to In Defense of Humanity with Al Whitney and Ingrid Castle.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and, of course, you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at numanarepublic.com. That's NUMANARepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.